what we can do now is we can test from this model. Because, as I said before, what we did was an exploration. This is completely disconnected from the actual application, from the stopwatch. But now we want to test that. So the goal of model-based testing is actually to check whether an implementation conforms to the model behavior, where behavior, remember, is a set of traces. So what we want to know, if someone had written, assigned the right colors to the traces, is basically whether red traces are impossible and green traces are possible. Okay, so how big is the set of traces for stopwatch? It's infinite. Is that true? Is it infinite? The set of green traces here, right? Not of impossible traces. Why is it? The answer is because I can do timer reset forever, for example. So if I start and just keep saying is timer reset, it will keep saying true. But one trace is timer reset once, another trace is do it twice, another trace is do it 42 times, and so on, right? So these are all traces, and that makes it infinite already. And there are other things I can do. For example, I can push mode button, 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 and so on. And these are all different traces. So although the model is finite in number of states, it has an infinite number of traces. How many tests do we need for stopwatch? Well, this is what's called a test selection problem. Actually, we need infinite if we want to make sure that all traces that the model predicts can be performed by the implementation. And this might seem not necessary at first, but it might be. I haven't written the implementation for stopwatch. Well, I have actually. But I might not have written the implementation. And I don't know, for example, if after pushing mode button twice, it starts resetting the timer, or three times, or for that matter, 1,000,000 times. So actually, if I want to really test the implementation completely, I would need infinite tests. But we know that's not possible to perform infinite tests, and that makes test selection incomplete by definition. So the test selection is always not complete. We have to select some traces. So there are several strategies based on coverage, and remember we're covering the model because, again, the implementation is a black box. We don't know what's inside the implementation. So we need to somehow cover the model to make sure to gain some certainty that the implementation behaves as the model predicted. So the strategy we select is transition coverage, all transitions. So we make sure that each step, let me go back here, each of these arrows, these state transitions, appears at least in one test, right? Not every path in the model. How many paths are there in the model? Infinite. Remember this? It's a path. This is a path, right? I keep doing this, this, this. This is still a path in the graph, right? So there are infinite paths, a lot, as you said. So again, I cannot cover all paths. What we can do is we can cover all transitions, for example, right? And another thing we do is we slice the model, usually, two interesting cases that we will see in the next session. In this session, I don't need to do that because my model is finite, so I can actually cover all transitions easily. So let's go to the model and try to create test cases for this model. Actually, I won't create them. I'll ask Spec Explorer to create these test cases first by writing another machine. Called my test cases. Yeah, I'm original this way. based on the same configuration, and the body of this machine will again be a construct. In this case, it will be construct test cases. So I'll tell Spec Explorer to construct test cases, and Spec Explorer constructs test cases based on a behavior, right? In this case, I could say I want to construct test cases for the behavior defined for machine my model program, right? So my model program, right? And that will create test cases based on the behavior that we have explored here. But in fact, there's something else that I want to do, is I want to make sure that all these test cases start by initializing the stopwatch. And remember, I haven't created a rule for the initialization. So if I go back to this exploration, there's no step labeled with the initialize action. It exists, it's declared here, initialize, but there's no rule in my model program that will produce this step. So what I will do is the behavior that I will provide for the construct test cases will not just be my model program, but it will be a composition. I will compose, and I will use the sequential composition, the semicolon, which means do one behavior and then do another behavior, and the first behavior will just be a call to the initialize action. So what I'm saying here is, what I'm telling Spec Explorer is, please combine these two behaviors. One is doing one initialize, the other one is this whole graph. So the result will be one initialize and then the whole graph, and then generate test cases from that. But the fact is now all test case, every test case will have a single initialize at the beginning.
Why don't you have to specify fully qualified stopwatch.initialize?
The question is, why don't I need to specify the fully qualified stopwatch.initialize? Because this is code syntax. In order to make these scenarios more readable, we just write the action names. We don't need to again name the fully qualified name. So that lets us core supports overloading. So if there are different initialize actions with different parameters, I would need to specify which parameters I'm using in order for Spec Explorer to be able to determine which initialize, but it will not let me have two initializes in two different namespaces, because it won't be able to differentiate them here.
And one other question. In the machine my model program, is Spec Explorer just randomly picking some state to start from?
The question is, in machine my model program, how does Spec Explorer pick the initial state? And the answer is?
Well, initial action.
Oh.
Initial rule.
So first, let's clarify the initial state. The initial state is determined here. See how I'm initializing the variables? This will be the values of the variables in the initial state, and that's what determines the initial state. From then on, it will explore all rules to check whether they are enabled or not, and if they are enabled, they will produce a step. So there is no real order, or actually the order doesn't matter. In this case, all rules were explored, and since the stopwatch is showing date and time, there are only two rules enabled. One is timer reset, and the other one is mode button. And Spec Explorer explored both, built a new state from each of them. This one happened to be the same it already knew, so it stayed there. It didn't create a new state. This one happened to be a new state, so it added this state to the graph. Sorry. It added this state to the graph, and again, from this state, it explored all enabled actions at this point. That's what it's doing. Okay, in fact, I just right-clicked unintentionally one of these states. But one thing you can see is if I want to know what's the difference between this state and this state here, I can click one of them, then right-click the other one and say compared with selected state, and it will show me here that the difference is that the display state is different, the probes are different, plus the display timer is false in one case and true in the other one. The rest is equal. Okay, question.
So I know that going back to initialize sets you up for a very clean state to run from every single test case. But isn't it interesting sometimes to run from a previously run state to make things interesting?
The question is whether that we are going back at the end of each test, we are telling Spec Explorer to go back to the initial state so that it can test from here. But the question isn't it interesting sometimes to start from an existing state? Well, there are several ways of doing that. That's not the case in this model. This model starts from this initial state. But the fact is that if, for example, if I'm interested in testing what happens from this state on, Spec Explorer will generate test cases for me. It will, some of the test cases will start by getting Spec Explorer to this state, and then they will proceed to explore possible paths from then on. So the question there probably is where does a test case start and where does it stop? Because I could say to your question, is it interesting to start from a different state? I could answer no, it's not that interesting. What's interesting is to start from the initial state, take the system to any possible state, and from there to test what you can do. And that's what we are doing. We'll see that when we generate tests, right? So the problem is if I let my test cases to start from different states, how will the test case know what the state of the implementation is in order to check whether it's behaving right or wrong, right? Remember, the implementation is a black box. When I start testing, I have to assume that the implementation is in certain state, and that problem we are solving by starting with an initialization of the implementation so that it always starts from the same state. There are different ways to do that. For example, I could change my initialize action. Not I, actually, the implementer of the system could change the initialize action to take some parameters. And then I could say, okay, initialize the stopwatch not always in the same state, but in this state or that state. And in that case, yeah, I would be able to test from different states. That's another way in which I can do it. Okay, so now I have this machine here, and I can explore it. I explored my model program, and in the same way, because this is the test cases that I built here are also a machine, when I go to Exploration Manager, it will show up here. By the way, it shows up because it's configured to show up there. I could say, I don't want to explore my model program, so I'll use a local switch to set for exploration equals false, which will make it disappear from this list, right? And instead of putting it here, I could have put it here. I could have say switch for exploration equals false. That makes all machines based on this config not for exploration. In this case, all machines are based on that. So there are no machines for exploration, but you can set some of them as where for exploration equals true, and then they will show again in Exploration Manager here. And same for this one in this case, which is what I want to explore. Right? Question.
Files, sleep the core.
The question is, can I break up my core script into different files? Yes, you can have as many code files in your project as you want, and Spec Explorer will build a single code file out of them before compiling. So yes, you can break them then. You don't need any include statement. Spec Explorer will put them all together, all the code files that it can see. Okay, so I will now explore my test cases. That's a new machine that we built. So I explore, and I get all these test cases, right? As I said, these test cases will take, they all start with initialize, right? That we got right. And it, they will take the system into the different states, and in each of these states, they will check whether the timer is reset. That's what each of these has a loop, and when Spec Explorer finds one of these self loops, it expands it only once so that we can check the state at that point. And that's what we get here. All these traces that check whether at each point, check whether the timer is reset or not, and expect something from the system. So that's the reason, again, why I have a return value. This calls its timer reset, but expects it to return false, right, or true, whatever. Okay, so these are my not the test cases themselves, because the test cases are code, are C-sharp code, and I don't have them yet. What I have is just this machine representing all the traces from which I will be generating test cases. I'm actually ready to generate test cases. But let's see one thing before we go there.
Sorry, Nico.
Yes?
So in those test cases, the reason Spec Explorer chose to call his timer reset at the beginning is because that was an enabled action for the initial state.
The question is, in these test cases, why did Spec Explorer call its timer reset in the initial state? The first answer is it didn't. In the initial state, all it called was initialized. But in the next state, it did call it because it was enabled. But also remember, Spec Explorer is generating, if I go back here, it's generating these test cases from, well, initialize, right? But for the exploration of the model program that I showed before. So the reason why it chose to invoke one of these actions was because it appeared here in this exploration, right? The fact that the action was enabled in the model program caused it to appear here as a step. Now, when generating test cases, Spec Explorer is traversing this exploration. So it's selecting some path of this exploration, and the reason why this exploration has some of them was because of rules, right? Okay, so back here. Actually, the test cases, as we've said before, can provide stimuli to the system under test and observe the correctness of responses that come from the system under test, right? So it's stimuli and responses. The question is, then what does an action like mode button or is timer reset mean? And the answer is, each of these two actions stand for a couple of what we call atomic actions. So mode button is actually a call to mode button and a return to mode button with a void result. Whereas its timer reset is actually a call to its timer reset and a return from its timer reset with a Boolean result. Some of these are stimuli, the calls, and some are responses. Right? So each of these two actions is composed of a stimulus and a response. And I can ask Spec Explorer to show me that. I've defined another view here called expanded descriptive. The way I created this view was by setting view collapse steps to false in the view, and that the result is that I see, this is the initial state, that I see now the call to its timer reset and the return from its timer reset. And here I see the call to mode button and the return to mode button. See how the return goes to a new state because it changes state.
And why are these diamonds here and they weren't the other diamonds?
The question is why I didn't see any diamond before and now I do. And the answer is because diamonds represent states where the test case will be waiting for the implementation to do something. So before, I only saw these states, which had the loops, for example. So the test case will not be waiting for anything at that point. But after sending a call, it will be waiting for something, and it's the corresponding return. So that's what the diamonds stand for. We will see more complex models where diamonds can expect more than one event or more than one response. In this case, they only expect a single response, which is the return for the call that created them.
I think one should say that the diamonds are always there. Before Nico switched the view, they were just hidden to make it more, you know, readable. Because obviously this graph here is not so nicely readable.
I'll repeat what Wolfgang said just for the benefit of the mic. So, you're welcome. So, actually, I haven't added these diamonds. I just changed the view. The view that I was using before was this state descriptions view. And if I look at the properties of the view, it said view collapse steps true. So the result was that two steps, one call and one return with a diamond in between, were collapsed into a single step, such as this one here or this one here. Actually, each of these arrows is such a step, composed of two atomic steps with a diamond in between. And it was done by Spec Explorer only for the display purposes, only to show us a simpler graph. Right? Now, when I change the view by setting collapse steps to false, it showed me what was already there. So if I go back to the state descriptions view, you will see here that this model actually has 44 states, of which I'm seeing 12. The reason is the collapse steps. I'm not seeing the diamonds. And same with steps. There are more steps than I'm seeing here, because each step stands for two steps, except for one of them or something. Okay. Yeah, that looks like a bug. Should probably be 3366. Question?
And those diamonds are always there even if the return value is void?
The diamonds are there even if the return value is void. I'll show you again how, for example, call mode button, which has a void return value, has first the call and then the return. Right?
And the reason is it couldn't terminate.
The reason, yes. As Wolfgang said, the reason is maybe we call it and nothing comes back. So Spec Explorer will stay there, we'll wait for a while, and after some time, which you can configure, it's a timeout, it will say, no, it didn't come out. It does use that the timeout for that, right? Okay, so I have, let me go back to the slides. So this is what we've just explained, the fact that we send out stimuli and receive back responses. We usually classify the systems we test into two categories, synchronous system and asynchronous system. A synchronous system, an example of a synchronous system you've just seen is the stopwatch. In a synchronous system, each response is immediately followed. Each request is immediately followed by a response. So this stimulus response, and it's a response corresponding to that same stimulus. And we say a system is asynchronous where there's no such a restriction. So that means there could be some stimuli that are never responded to. Perhaps my model allows that, and there can be several stimuli followed by a single response, or the other way around, several responses following a single stimulus. Anything is possible, and that's what we call an asynchronous system, right? This is perhaps it's a very simple definition and a syntactic one, if you want, but we found it very valuable when understanding whether a system is synchronous or not, right? Whether it immediately responds to stimuli or not. I've already answered the last question, stopwatch synchronous or asynchronous, right? It is a synchronous system. And here's the expanded states that I've shown before, and the fact that there are some observation states there. The diamonds are states in which Spec Explorer is expecting to observe something. Okay, so now I'm ready to generate test cases for my stopwatch and actually test the stopwatch. In order to generate test cases, I would either right-click the machine from which I want to generate test cases, and it's very important that it should be a machine that looks very much like this. So it's composed of several initial states, each with a sequence, and not from a machine that looks like this, that has all these loops and these choices. So we want first to construct test cases using the test cases construct, and then let Spec Explorer generate code from them, right? So it should be from this machine. As I said, the way I would generate the test cases now is by right-clicking this machine and clicking Generate Test Code, or by selecting it and clicking this button here. Both, as you see, both the menu option and the button are dimmed out. They're gray because this machine is not supposed to be to be used to generate test cases, because I haven't indicated so, actually. The fact is that if you see the configuration, it has a switch saying for exploration equals false that I just added, and also one saying test enabled equals false. And this is actually a recommended approach, because then one will not accidentally try to generate test cases from a machine that wasn't created to generate test cases like this one here. So this is, in fact, a machine from which I intend to generate test cases. So I'll indicate that by saying test enabled equals true. And just by doing that, I get back the generate test cases button, or the right-click generate test code. When I click this, Spec Explorer will again validate and explore, because the test cases are generated from an exploration result of this machine, and then it will tell me it has generated code, and it will tell me where it has been generated. This is a little hard to read, but there's another complete path here that you can use, right? Telling me where it is. And the location of this generated test is set through switches in my config, so I told it where to generate it. And it happens so that I have pointed it to this file, which is it has just regenerated under the test suite project.
It generated my test cases.cs.
Oh, that's a good point. Wolfgang has a good point. So the name of the machine is my test cases. So the name of the generated test cases, if I can now open this, is actually my test cases.cs. And the file that I added to my solution here is called test suites.cs, One way to correct that is, for example, to rename this machine, right? One can also provide the name of the generated tests as a switch. But I will rename the machine and regenerate.
Test suite. Test suite. Yeah.
Thanks. Test suite. I'll regenerate now the test cases. They should go. A simple way to check that you're generating the right file is you open this file, right? And then when you generate test cases, Spec Explorer will request permission to rewrite it, right? To reopen it because it has been rewritten, which is the case, right? Yes, so it will reload the file.